A Conversation Between a Grandfather and a Grandson by Bernie and Charlie Siegel. The book is When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is. The other things we include in this conversation, Bernie had a near-death experience when he's 4 years old, and then he also had, with the death of his wife, an experience that reminded him she's still around. So we talk about that. Charlie has an extensive background in martial arts. He started when he was 4 years old, and he's 25 now, so we get into that background as well. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you have a chance, check out the book. Retired pediatric surgeon Bernie Siegel put the mind-body-spirit connection together a long time ago. 1986, his first book was a bestseller, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and that mindset still works.
Hello to Charlie and Bernie. I appreciate you guys getting together for this.
Thanks for
having
you.
Our mind is really what our body experiences. You know, people could be listening to this program, and one says it's boring, and the other one says it's wonderful. What's different are the people. Right. And so, hey, I look for people, well, like the title of a book, When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is, that when people are, you know, willing to open their minds and do that, then wonderful things happen. And that's really how Charlie and I connected. I was writing a book that's out now, No Endings, Only Beginnings, about life also, and my experience. I mean, it sort of blew me away because it took me a hell of a lot more years to wake up and learn from my troubles. And here he is at his young age, already having been open to that. So he impressed me. And then we began sharing our poetry, not just our spirituality. And, you know, it's almost like, hey, we're twins because we've written the same things, felt the same things. And it was just a blessing, you know, to have it all happen and give birth to a book.
I guess, Charlie, could you go first? Pick something from the book, one of your best entries or one that it just feels good right now. And then we'll have Bernie follow up with his.
Yeah. We were talking about reading from the trees section. And so I think that's a good idea. We can both read from, but there's a, so our book is broken into 7 chapters. It's designed like a conversation about life. So where a lot of his poetry comes, my mom started Wisdom of the Ages as her spiritual store and class center in Simsbury, Connecticut. She started when I was 3 running that. And now I manage it alongside her, and we work there together. And so a lot of it is like growing up with her teaching meditation and spiritual classes and hearing her work with customers. So growing up around all of that, and then seeing the reach that Grandpa Bernie has had with all the people that have been touched by his work is definitely an inspiration and a guide for me and on mine. So I was writing for years, and then he's written a lot of stuff, and we were just sharing our work with each other, and we saw these ways that work years apart and in separate experiences, they line up pretty amazingly sometimes.
Yeah.
Like we were having this kind of subconscious conversation. So I'll read my piece. It's an excerpt from one of my poems called My Brother Trees.
Okay.
So it discusses that connection that we have with nature and the lessons it holds for us. Let not my leaves be torn off by a harsh wind singing in the dead of night, brought in by the cold winter months to come. But let me take ease in the shifting changes like my brother trees do. Let me see the way that the winds of change can shape me to be my purest self, annulled of illusions and illuminated by the clarity that is my destiny held aloft by my heart. In the little changes in the ever-rolling hills, the land is eavesdropping on the season to come. As change takes a deep breath and begins to blow out its wonder, then letting the leaves rake their magical colors across the ever-changing sky, let me see how I'm a part of all that surrounds me and how deep within me is the key to the secret, which in fact is the key itself.
I love that. Yeah. The thing with Charlie's work is, I mean, that the poem that we just heard, I think speaks volumes to the way we relate with nature and life. So, Bernie?
All right. Here is one also with the title Trees. And this is why I love connecting with Charlie. You know, when you're sharing poems that you've stored in your computer, and it's like talking to yourself, let's put it that way. I watch the trees grow and branch, reaching out and upwards. Why? What directs them? Who guides them? What voice speaks to them about how to grow, reach, divide, ever upwards towards what? Is it the sun? Something more pulls them skywards. Maybe we need to raise our arms toward the sky and find the answer.
I like that one too.
Titled Trees. And I literally used to use the trees as teachers for our children. One example was how they grew around nails. I think I wrote a poem about that. That here's something that's stabbing you in the side and you grow around it and take it in. And that literally happened. A plant, when our street was repaved, I saw a crack in the pavement and this plant came popping up through it. And I thought, how did it know which way was up? How did it know that it could get through concrete? It's a little plant. And when I took the family down there for a therapy session about if you run into trouble, keep pushing, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The kids weren't impressed. That's just a skunk cabbage. What's the big deal? I said, it's not the plant. It's what it did that I want you to,
yes,
you know, pay attention to and,
yeah,
be like that plant. So even when you're buried under troubles, you can push your way through and find the sun.
It's hard to put this into words because it's a lot of emotion and feeling, but that comes through in your writing, and I really enjoy the book.
Well, I always have said that the world is perfectly imperfect. You know, that, well, God's conversation with me is a perfect world is not creation. It's a magic trick. So, you know, when you realize things are perfect, that doesn't mean there are no problems,
mm-hmm,
but they're perfect in the sense of what we're learning from our difficulties. Yeah, I used to say to people, what are you experiencing? A tragedy, a disease in their life. And some would say things like pressure, failure, roadblock. And others would say, wake up call, a blessing, a new beginning.
Yeah.
And they're facing life-threatening illnesses, but it awakens them to life. Yeah, I was just, you know, at this time of year, some of our grandchildren are graduating. And I love saying to people, what is a graduation called? A commencement. Where did that come from? You're finished. Why isn't it called a termination? You know, are you going to come to my termination?
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, all those little crazy things wake me up because you're graduating, but you're beginning a new experience.
Yeah.
And you continue with that education and life. So I say, keep commencing.
In the middle of an epidemic, pandemic, for Charlie, what's changed?
It's worked out actually well in a way that we were able to release our book during this time, as we've gotten to, you know, talk with you and lots of people about our book. And we've wanted to release it to help the world and to help people with a positive perspective change on their own lives and on the world in general. So to get to release it now and kind of in a way when it's needed the most, that means a lot to both of us. And I've been comparing it to, like, this is a time when it's, you know, it's a darker time for the world and a time that's sad a lot of times. So it's also a time when we can all work to shed as much light as we can and to share that light with each other. You know, like when you have the darkest room, then the candles are most beautiful in the darkest room. So to get to share something positive with everybody is meaningful. But yeah, my mom's store is shut down along with so many other businesses right now. We're doing like curbside pickup and shipment, but yeah, we miss being in there working with people. But next week we think we'll be back, and I'll see when I'll be back to running martial arts classes again and stuff, but we're making the best of it while we can.
What about Bernie? How does it work for you?
Well, two things. One, a little poem, so to speak, from Charlie on a calendar he made. My candle burns not to dispel the darkness, but to put forth the light. And that's what life is about and how I live. And this is a poem called Eternity. I am asked to be prepared for eternity. How do I prepare? Where will I spend it? Find questions for philosophers. I don't have that problem. Eternity troubles me not at all. I'm having trouble with today. If I can master today, eternity will take care of itself. Eternity, from what I know of it, can't be as much trouble as today. When eternity comes, I'll take it one day at a time.
Bernie Siegel, Wendy's Coffee House. KCMO Talk Radio. Eternity.
That's, you know, the answer to your question. How do I get through it one day at a time? I'm glad. I've learned from survivors. I don't get upset. You know, I have fun walking around with masks, saying to people, oh, you look familiar. Have I met you before? And they're all covered up.
Yes, yes.
And they're strangers. You know, you're out in the street or shopping, you know, when you have to go and you're all covered up. And everybody bursts out laughing when I say things like that. Oh, hey, you look familiar. And that's, then we all feel better.
Yes.
You, somebody smiled, made you smile, and you get through the day that way. So, you know, I really don't see it as a problem. And I'd say also, I'm not afraid of dying. I had a near-death experience when I was 4 years old, choking on a toy. So I know what it's like to leave your body and so-called, quote-unquote, be dead. But so like I say, I'm not worried about it. When it comes, it comes. And we all recycle, believe me, we do. Our consciousness keeps going. So the fun is, use the time that you have now, the experience you have now, and enjoy life, that we're given a body to do something with and accomplish something. And I always say, try to be God's right arm. You know, I didn't write a poem, or maybe I did, I don't know. How would you introduce yourself to God when you get to heaven? Because if you said, I'm a doctor, the answer is come back when you know who you are. But, you know, it's about being a part of God. If you said, tell God his right arm is here, or tell God his child is here, then God says, come on in. And I think that's what we all need to feel is that connection, you know, that we're like a tool of God's. Let's put it that way. Yeah. So that we're doing things to please God and help move the process of creation forward. And I'd say to people, just remember that. That's your job. And keep it up. And it's more likely to keep you alive, too, because immune function, well, I always say, Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, well, Charlie wrote this, Finding God. And I heard them say that God is everywhere, but I was unsure of how to see him. So I asked them where exactly I could find him. And they pointed to my heart, and I knew that was my place to start.
Yes.
I can tell you from patients, this statement came, when you live in your heart, magic happens. Mm-hmm. And I say that to everybody listening. Live in your heart. What does that mean? What makes you happy? And that's not about being selfish. It's what makes you happy, your way of contributing. And if you let others impose it on you, that's why I get back to the homeschooling. His parents didn't say to Charlie, this is what we want you to be. What are you doing with all the photographs and martial arts? And, you know, we want you to be this.
Right.
Be a professional. And I know lots of people who, when they had life-threatening illnesses, quit what they did for their parents and found their own life again. And I think that's also. I became a doctor because I wanted to help people. My parents weren't particularly thrilled with me being a doctor because they don't know how to help me or do anything, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, but they gave me the freedom to do what makes you happy. And so if I decided that made me happy, okay, go ahead.
There's a lot going on right now where people, this is a reset basically, because people have been thrown off of whatever track they were on into a very chaotic, uncertain time. When you guys are talking with your poems and bringing through these emotions, there's one in here that says, start now. And this is yours, Bernie. I like that one. It's because you're not thinking about it, but doing it. Once you've begun, it all changes. No more thinking and scheduling. We're in it now. Doing, working, living, life makes its own schedule. We live, start living it now. And that's part of it, is that that's so appropriate for this moment of, we can't put all our projections on this, our what ifs and because and so-and-so said, and you promised this. It's a, what have I got to work with and how can I make it work for me? And then you go forward.
What you remind me of is the issue of faith and trust. I've seen what people are capable of overcoming. And this doesn't mean you're a failure if you don't, you know, overcome an illness.
Right.
I've learned from those who are, let's say, you know, it's like learning from a star athlete. I forgot who it was. One of them said, when people said, how did you get to be like this? Practice. What you learn is you imitate those who are successful. And I often say to people, if you have a question, ask yourself, what would Lassie do? And then follow that. So again, it's about relationships. Women live longer than men with the same cancers, because the men are, I can't work. You know, what's the point of living? And the women are, I can't die until they're all married and out of the house. So these are quotes from patients of mine, and or even over their pets, that they can't die because they got a house full of creatures.
Yeah.
You know, when I think back to our life. Yeah. And so, again, people need to have a way of contributing and having a meaningful life. And then they are more likely to survive all the illnesses because of what their immune function is doing. See, if you take actors, I think it was William Saroyan, and he wrote this line. He said, everybody alive is an actor, but almost everybody alive is a very pathetic actor. And so you rehearse and practice. And that's why you're given a lifetime to rehearse and practice. And that's what people need to do. When you get up in the morning, say, if I were the person I want to be, how would I act today? And then work at it. And have your family and coworkers and friends be your coaches. So they don't say, you're an idiot, what the hell are you doing? No, that's not coaching. They can say, well, I gave people a pin with the word attitude, was what it was. And so in the family, you could walk over, twist the pin and say, hey, honey, straighten out your attitude. Or our kids would say to me, you're not in the operating room now, when I would become overbearing, you know, the chief surgeon.
Yeah.
And it was a way of reminding us of our behavior. So learn from each other. Tell them to be your coach. And keep rehearsing and practicing until you become the person you want to be. And as I said, Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. When you're not enjoying Monday, unhappy about your life, it takes its toll on you. And actors, literally, I mean, these things have been done. If you draw blood from actors while they're in tragedies, their immune function goes down, stress hormone levels go up. When they're in a comedy, the opposite happens. Their immune function increases and stress hormone levels go down. So again, if you're in a Mel Brooks production, you're going to make it through the winter without the flu or, you know, cold and problems. But if you're in some Death of a Salesman, you're not going to do too well. Yeah.
I actually had a dream one time, and it was a spooky, scary, frightening horror. And I went to the elevator and I pushed the button to go up because I thought, this is the floor. I don't want this floor. I'm on the wrong floor. I'm going upstairs to the comedy.
Nice.
I do a lot with dreams and drawings. You know, they say God speaks in dreams and images, but your unconscious speaks to you in dreams and images. So, well, even simple as a drawing, if you said, I wonder if I'm in the right profession, I'd say, draw your choices. Who should I marry? Where should I live? What treatment should I have? Draw them with crayons and then look at them the next day. And it'll be very clear to you which is the right thing for you to do, from who I should marry to what treatment I should have.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
Charlie, I want to go back. It was one of the little posters from your jujitsu, your teacher, Roy Goldberg. And I think it was like for training, because it isn't about the power. It's about the presence. And I thought, well, that's a wonderful concept and a space to be. Just your mindset. It isn't about something external, you know, for mindset. The frame of reference that offers with your background in martial arts is excellent.
Thanks. Yeah, we discussed Shugyo a lot in our training. I practiced Aitri Aiki Jiu-Jitsu, and Roy Goldberg is my instructor. He's actually the highest level ever non-Japanese person in the system. It was the family art of the Takeda clan of the samurai going back 1,200 years. So I train with him and sometimes travel with him for seminars and stuff, and then I run my own classes also. And yeah, we discussed Shugyo, which it's kind of a complicated mentality or thought process, but kind of like at its basis, it's the idea that you're always polishing and like always working on making things better. Like if you were a gem, you're always polishing it. And the idea that like you're never done polishing it, it can always get better. And that works for your martial arts training, but it also applies to the rest of your life. That like in the back of our book here, at the end of my little mini biography on our book, it says that I'm an eternal student. And that's how I think of myself. My other grandfather on my mom's side said, you want to be learning until the day you die. That's what life is about, to be always learning. And so then yeah. I find an instructor that like he says, like, if you ever hear him say that he gets it, go find somebody else. Like he's always saying like he's beyond understanding of how good he is, in my opinion. But he has this idea that it can always get better, and it can. You can always get better at something, and to have that drive and that passion that's what life's about. I wanted to mention one of my other pieces in our book here. We have a chapter called Inner Light, the light within, and the way that you can connect with that. And one of my pieces in the back of that chapter, it's an excerpt from The Light in the Room. It says, one man sat in a dark room and cried, for he could not see. Another man entered the room and turned the light on. How did you do that? Exclaimed the first man. I just had to imagine that I could, replied the second. Another man sat farther over in the same room, quiet and smiling. He was blind, and whether the space around him happened to be dark or light at the time, he chose to be happy. Inside of himself, he had turned the light on long ago.
Yeah.
So that's part of that idea that we want to share with our book, is a lot of it is perspective change, that when we want to look at the world as something that we can learn from and make it the best that it can be, or make ourselves the best that we can be and help others, that it turns things around. It might be a dark room at the time, but later on we could see that was the opportunity we needed to grow from. So then things are perfect after all.
That old line, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's why there are no coincidences. People need to understand that. And I'd say, yeah, get this book, read it. It will open you to certain things. Because a lot of times I get letters and emails from people saying, I was walking through a bookstore, the bookshelf fell off the shelf. I picked it up, it was your book. I started looking through it. And I'd say, it's no coincidence. How did that book fall off the shelf?
Yeah.
You know, or sticking out or something. And I've learned to believe that. I used to hear that from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Pardon me, there are no coincidences. Well, Jung's way of saying it was, the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance and therefore can be guessed by clairvoyance. So fortune tellers are reading you.
Yes.
And that's why I think Charlie and I sort of, in a sense, agree with the future and the path and how you find your way. And yeah, because there are several poems on the road, the path, footsteps. It's, again, the struggle to find the way.
Charlie, at the end of the book, the one that you have here about sitting on the bench and meeting the child.
Mm. Oh, yeah, my short story. Yeah.
Did this come from some of your writing? Because I know you also have another novel that's out.
I had written it before, like a lot of the other poetry, but we really felt like it fit with the message in this book. And I have a novel I released in 2017, Conversations with an Angel. It's an inspirational message, helping people going through grief and loss in their lives to work through it in a spiritual kind of way and see the way that the spirit of that family member can be with us still and connected to us through love. But I've written a lot of short stories. I have a whole collection of more poems and short stories and stuff that that aren't in the book. But there's a lot of cool stuff in the book already. It's the story of the bench. Like, what if you met a little boy on a bench that says he's talking to God, and he teaches you a whole different way to see God and to connect with that healing power.
Yeah, okay. We won't share that one, okay? So whoever's listening is going to have to find out what that one is. It leaves you with a wonderful image and impression and connection. And I think that is what a lot of these stories are about. It's opening that inner connection, that sense of belonging. The stories here of connecting with the stillness and the silence. There's still heart in all of that. And I love the way that's subtle, but so present in your stories.
My mom and I have a lot of Native American friends, and my grandparents on her side did. So she grew up connected with a lot of their teachings, and we go to powwows and get a lot of handmade things for the store. So that's part of how I've been raised too, is with more of a native perspective on the way that we're connected with nature. And there's a saying that all my relatives, that like the land and the animals and the everything, and including each other, we're all related, we're all part of a family. So a lot of our work together, and a lot of my own work carries on that message, that when you go out in nature, you connect with these patterns and forces of life, you realize you're a piece of that, and there's a healing power there that really uplifts you from the hardness of regular life kind of stuff. You go out and you get back to what's more real, being out in nature and in a more spiritual sense.
With your martial arts background, there's a talk about balance, and that's, I think, at the core what you're writing. This, you know, maybe right. It wasn't intended, but that's what the two of you bring to this book, is the give and take and the natural flow of somebody who's 25 and somebody who's over 50.
I'm a senior, that's right.
So that's the dynamic where every part of life is special. It isn't less because you're young or more because you're older. It's all beautiful.
Well, let me read you. And, as I'm looking through while I'm listening to the two of you, it's called Come In. I want to leave the darkness to enter the world of the enlightened. I cry out for help. I look for the light. I bang on the door. Don't leave me in the dark. Let me in. Finally, an answer. The door is opened. I have been inside all the time. I only need to open my eyes and see the light within. And that's something, again, that so often people have some tragic event and say, oh, it's a wake-up call, a blessing, a new beginning, because it's like the door to life opened. And we shouldn't have to wait till you have a disaster to have that happen. I can't help but read my own. One more, out of my mind. I am usually out of my mind. There's nowhere else I'd rather come from or go to or be. Sometimes I get lost in my thoughts. I struggle to find my way out of my mind and into my body so I can feel and find my way into my heart and my right mind. No. My wife died 2 years ago. 9 months after she died, what organ in my body do you think had trouble?
Your heart.
My heart. Yeah, the rhythm. I mean, the heart is okay, and I'm fine.
Yeah.
But it just went crazy, beating out of rhythm. And it's so reinforced all the things I'm trying to teach people all the time. Your loved one dies, what organ in your body acts up?
Mm-hmm.
My heart. And so I've learned from that, too. And I listen to my body and have had, I could do a whole show for you if you want, on all the mystical things that have happened communicating with my wife, especially this weekend, which was Mother's Day. It just blows my mind how these things keep happening that you cannot explain.
Break time. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
What happened?
Well, we were married on the 11th. I did a wash on Saturday, opened the dryer to take the clothes out, and inside the dryer, lying on the metal, is a dime and a penny, the 11th. The next day, I'm making my bed. It's the bed the two of us used to sleep in.
Uh-huh.
And I go around to the other side to pull things back, and drop them. But as I picked it up, it flew out of my hands, because mm-hmm. I'm trying to pull it. And it flew out of my hands and folded backwards. And lying on the sheet of the bed were a dime and a penny. I can tell you there's absolutely no freaking reason that I can find to explain that.
Uh-huh.
I don't carry money into my bed when I'm naked to go to sleep at night.
Yes.
And if
yes.
I'm lying on the top blankets, those are the things that
okay. Was
like, wow.
Well, okay, so what was your uptake on the meaning? Obviously, yes, it's your wife.
My wife is saying, hey, I love you. It's Mother's
yes.
Day.
Yes.
And then, because Mother's Day was the 10th and Monday was the 11th. So it's like, and 9, she was born on 9-9. So 9, 10, 11, those were 3 days, all of which had symbolic meaning. And she's saying, hey, I love you. And take it easy. I'm hanging around. Everything's okay.
Yes. Yes.
And right. obviously, you know, you're in a position where you have a lot more of that intuitive element. And now you've got somebody there right beside you on that parallel plane going, hey, look at this. This is cool. We're still here. I don't have the body, but I got your back. How's that?
Yep. And life is a mystery.
Yes.
I mean, we can't really explain creation. I don't care how much you talk about it. And that's why I love writing the poetry, to say, what is going on in your life? What are we experiencing? You know, when you realize how perfect everything is, some people might argue that God didn't do a perfect job. Look at all the troubles we have.
Oh.
But it's about the meaning. So, yes, you write a poem, then you realize, hey, out of my troubles, look what I did. Or you do a painting. Or you help some soul, and out of your difficulties, beautiful things happen.
Wisdomoftheages.biz, where you can buy the book and you can find out more about Charlie's mom and the store and crystal healing and those kind of things. And Bernie's website is berniesiegelmd.com, and you can find out all of Bernie's books and his background as well. This is the saying I was trying to get. It goes with the martial arts, but it goes with living, and it goes with what you two connect with in the book. And it says, it takes 100 times to remember the moves. So this is basically as we're going through life, period. It takes 100 times for me to get some things right in my relationships and my way of seeing and being in the world. And from that, 1,000 times to make them beautiful if I continue. And then 10,000 times to grasp their essence. And that would be, why am I doing it? How did this change? And that to me is the magic that, Bernie, you talk about when you're dealing with people who heal from extraordinary circumstances and go through their life, and all of a sudden something changes like a dime and a penny out of the clear blue. Magic.
Yeah. It, you know, the thing I was just thinking, always say to people is, if you want to know the truth, read fiction. Now you'd say, what are you talking about? But it's the people who write the fiction have observed the world. So what they're writing about is the truth. It's the characters that are fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, I've been enlightened in so many ways by so many authors who speak, you know, the truth. Discussing, for instance, a young man dying, a young man on the flying trapeze by William Saroyan. When the young man dies, he becomes dreamless, unalive, and perfect. You know, and mm-hmm. here is an author using those words. And of course, I agree with him that when we leave our bodies, we're perfect again. But I always think, where did he come up with that? How did he think of that? In Human Comedy by Saroyan, love is immortal and makes all things immortal. And so I'd say to people, you want to live forever? Love somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only way to make it.
There's one thing that we talked about before we started recording, and that was the book that you wrote about that had to do with animals, The Love, Medicine, and Miracles. That was the beginning. But then it was so funny because I interviewed you and I said, I wish you'd come up with one more and include animals. So it came out in 2015, Love, Animals, and Miracles.
Right.
Yes. And your family was a zoo, and we were talking about the ducks.
Yeah. I mean, it's the love that happens. We had ducks and geese in the yard. But when they would lay eggs, we would bring them in and hatch them in incubators. And so when they popped out of the egg, the first persons they saw were our children. And they assumed the kids were their parents. What we learned eventually, and began to be funny in the neighborhood, when the school bus would come to pick up our kids, the ducks and geese would get in line and walk down to the bus with them and try to jump up into the step on the bus. And the drivers were very friendly, so they didn't yell at me and report me, you know. And then when the bus came home, there were the ducks and geese waiting. And I also mentioned that we put many of them in a lake next to my parents' house. It was a beautiful, lovely place for them. And I was so happy to be able to take them there, until it broke my heart when my mother called and said, our neighbors are asking a question of you. What is it? Every time a school bus comes down our street, the ducks and geese walk half a mile up to the road to meet the bus. And that broke my heart, because they were looking for our children,
yeah,
their parents. Yeah. And that's the connection that we have.
It's a heart.
And that animals really respect it more than we do. Joseph Campbell, he tells a story of a tiger who dies giving birth while she was chasing some goats. And the goats see this little baby and say, oh, let's raise it. Don't let it die. So the tiger grows up thinking he's a goat. And then another tiger comes along and says, hey, stupid, what are you doing here? And, you know, here's a piece of meat. No, I'm a vegetarian. You know, there's humor in it, too. But mm-hmm. the ultimate answer is what we all need to learn, the quiet mind. Come with me. He takes him to a still pond, says, look, you're like me. You're a tiger. You're not a goat. And that impressed me, too, because it reminded me of the good old ugly duckling. See, when you're not whining about life, I had the worst mother in the world, the horrible lady, look. No, the ugly duckling doesn't walk away cursing his mother who throws him out of the house. And he's sitting on a pond one day and he realizes, oh, I'm the same as those swans. I'm a swan. Because he saw them and said, gee, I wish I was a swan. And then when he looks down at the still pond, and that's the lesson why we keep writing, and again, how perfect everything is. It's perfect when the pond is still and your mind is quiet. Then you see the beauty, and that includes seeing yourself and even communicating with animals. And I've learned a lot of things that you can do when your mind is quiet. Then you can connect with others and with yourself.
Yeah. Charlie, you have some extraordinary, beautiful pictures in the book, The Northern Lights. You've obviously done a little traveling.
Yeah, I went in 2015 and 2016. I went twice to Iceland, and I got to train more in like manual photography and more advanced kind of settings and stuff, and how to do that kind of work in the field in Iceland. And then I was in Japan last summer for martial arts training, and we got to tour around some, and I did some photography also. So the book has both of those countries and United States, like the Northeast, all throughout it. And my photography, my goal with it is that I want to help people to connect more with nature and with the lessons, and I say the healing beauty of nature's touch. So my work is like a window for people to see that through, bring it inside and have it on the wall and get to connect with that more and remember they're a part of everything and a part of each other.
And one more coincidence, I'm a painter and an artist. And I think that was another place where Charlie and I connected. With him, it's the beauty, you know, in the photography, I doing paintings. But again, you see the world differently when you are an artist.
And we got to go with that. That was, I was just thinking, you, when you said, Bernie, what would you tell God? Who are you? And I say, well, I was going to say, hi, God, I'm your paintbrush.
Right. That's wonderful.
That's yours.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys have good results with your book. The book, When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is, and you guys, I hope you have another book in you, okay?
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sitting here smiling, so thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.